This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Just as the clock struck midnight at the end of November 3rd, I ran a three-hour program to continue to monitor the election results, and with that I had a special guest, close friend of mine and combat veteran from Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, Chuck Prodnick. Chuck has saved my life in Afghanistan in a firefight. He's also a staunch Canadian Trump supporter with a really good understanding of the political lay of the land. And so on this night we had some great discussions, especially considering all that has transpired of what the election was looking like and where it was going. Welcome to the Bards FM podcast. My name is Scott Kesterson. I am the director and producer of the war documentary, Bards of War, Fighting is Everything. And you are listening to episode 148, live stream, Midnight Rider, part 2. No matter where you live, you're facing some real challenges right now. There's too much unrest and uncertainty. In some spots, it's not even safe to go to the corner store, and that makes getting food a problem. If things don't get better, will you have enough food to eat in the weeks and months ahead? Many folks won't. But those who act now and get at least 4 weeks' supply of emergency food shipped to them fast will be the ones that are secure. That's why I strongly recommend My Patriot Supply, the only source I personally use and trust for my emergency food preparedness plan. You should too. They're the go-to experts in emergency preparedness. Their mission is your survival. Right now, save $100 off a full 4 week supply of their tasty meals that supply 2,000 calories a day. This will save your life if food disappears from the grocery shelves again. And saving $100 is impossible to pass up. So go to preparewithbardsofwar.com and get ready now. That's preparewithbardsofwar.com or click on the link below. Do it today.
The strength of the digital army, like you say, is turning the tables on the ambush. So on that, let's talk about a real life ambush, which you and I live through. And that's Sangin, right? Mm-hmm. So let's set it up. Let's set the situation, lay out the groundwork for them. And let them, Patriots want to tell you a story. It's in the film. It's actually the last combat scene in the film, Bards of War, Fighting is Everything. And it's this is a real life situation of a real ambush of what happens. And you're going to hear Chuck and I talk about this. It's from two different optics, because in this lay of the land, Chuck is on a different plane of fight. He's down in the field and I'm up on the hillside. But Chuck, go ahead and set the conditions for us.
Basically, this fight starts. We hadn't really slept in about, 10 days or so too well. And the night previous to this, you'll remember we were under an all-night attack from what they figured was a section of Chechens who were night visioned up and had sniper rifles. And every time we tried to move around, they were taking shots at us and we were shooting back. So it was just an all-around, not a great night. For our day off, they said, well, you guys can go into Sangin and do a battle damage assessment on where we dropped a JDAM a few days earlier and report back on the damage done. So we thought, this can't be too bad. But we didn't know anything about Sangin, not till later. We had no idea it was apparently the most dangerous place in Afghanistan at that point, which put it pretty close to the top of the most dangerous places in the world that year. So we went in with about 14 or 15 dismounts, maybe 16 dismounts, left our vehicles in the rear because we were going into a built-up area and we didn't want to bring the vehicles in to get blown up right away. And we could tell, like anybody who's been to Afghanistan, as soon as you have an absence of villagers, there's going to be a fight. So we knew pretty quick that we were going to be walking into one. And this was a fairly big town. You know, it's probably about, population-wise, you're looking at a town about 10,000 people in it, spread out over an area, and there's no one in sight. And it was about the time where myself, Tony and Mark, two of my three guys, hopped a wall, hopped over a ditch that was about 3 feet wide. It was when you're wearing 80 pounds of gear, it takes a bit to get over all that stuff. And then we wound up in this open field, and we're in the corner of it, and about 50 feet away, I looked up and saw about a dozen Taliban looking at me. And I thought, well, this is where it happens, and I'm not going to get out of this one because they've got the ground and I don't. And I just yelled, there's an ambush on the high left. And I think I said it twice because
in
my head, that was the smarter thing to do, was to declare it to everybody. And then I thought we were going to be dead.
Well, I'm going to add, let me jump in here real quick because I'm going to add some fill. So when we got out of the vehicles, and I know you were kind of alluding to this, but first thing we noticed was the women and children literally running out of the village. And it was like, And I remember looking at you and Mark, and it's just like, we're going to get hit. And we knew that going in. So it's really kind of a crazy moment when you know you're walking into an ambush, you know, it's going to happen. And this is where I think a lot of the lesson of the story comes in. It's very applicable. And where it is that as we come into all these things, like you said earlier, you know, you're going to get hit. You know, there's going to be corruption in a polling station. That's the ambush, right? We know that they're going to try to rig the fix. So the mindset has to be, okay, you know, you're going to get hit, but what are you going to do to make sure that you don't get killed? You're going to turn that ambush on itself and destroy the enemy. Would that be fair?
That's exactly it. You don't win a fight by going backwards. I've never won a battle by running away or just burying my head or just pretending that somebody was going to figure it out. But no.
So
bear down and you take it to them and run them over.
Absolutely. So I'm also going to say here is I'm seeing a lot of Patriots comments. I guess POTUS is going to speak. So Patriots, I'm going to rely on you because we're not going to stop the show, but I'm going to rely on some updates from Patriots on what POTUS says so we can transmit it, and we're continuing to do that. That's pretty amazing, and I'm really liking it. We're doing it this way so we can, Patriots, you keep your ears open and let us know if anything breaks. So again, so exactly, we get into this place, you've jumped down over into that valley, you're going to have to share the story of when this fighting starts, because you always talk about the blade of grass. So tell us about that.
So we essentially, it's one of those weird moments where I could see them, they could see me, and when you're 60 feet away from each other, you can see every physical, you know, feature on a man's face. And me and the two, like Tony and Mark, that were in the field with me, they're both 21 years old, they're kids, but they've been fighting hard for 6 months, so they weren't new to this either. And we just got heavy on our triggers and started putting them down right away. They put an RPG in between me and Tony, and we kind of were laying on the ground at that point, kind of shook, and looked at each other, said a few things, and, you know, are you okay? Are you okay? And then I remember looking, you know, between me and the Taliban, and all I had was about a blade of grass for cover. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to do. This isn't going to work out so well, hiding behind a single blade of grass in an open field. So all you can do, anybody that's been in the military knows that when you train for an ambush, you're essentially writing yourself off. You're not going to, a well-executed ambush is going to take you down, but you have to make it cost. So I told the boys, let's break contact to the right. And you can see a bit of that in the film. You can see us doing our first evolution to the right, and it was going pretty good. I'd noticed that Ben, my ginger, I jumped the wall as well to get into the kill field with us. And he was 24 at that time, but he jumped in to be with us, added his gun to the fight. And the Taliban had a small machine, or, you know, PKM machine gun set up about 100 meters out and started to put it on us. And it was at that moment that they went from being really, really bad to, well, it doesn't get much worse. So I told the boys, we have to attack. And this is all going on. There's about a dozen guys in front of us shooting at us hard. There's a machine gun on our flank shooting at us hard. And we're in an open field where the grass is doing all it can to stop the bullets for us. And I said, okay, let's throw a grenade each. When the last grenade goes off, we're pushing in. And Mark threw a grenade. Tony stayed on his machine gun, so he didn't throw one. Ben threw a grenade. really good grenades. And then I went and threw a grenade, and I always blame it on my armor, messing up my throwing arm, but my grenade didn't go where it should have. And I kind of teetered on this low wall and then fell back onto our side. I didn't even bother to lay down. I just looked there with my head down, and then the ginger was beside me and he starts laughing, and in the middle of a firefight, he's laughing about it. Like, you're an idiot. So we stood up and I'm like, okay, boys, we got to go in. And we closed that 60-foot gap. That 60 feet was probably the longest 60 feet I've ever pushed in my life. And we got into them at muzzle contact and we put them down. And, I give them credit. I hate them. I really hate them. I hate them with everything I have. But they didn't break and run. And I expected them to break and run, and they didn't. They fought right in that position, and they didn't give it up. They died there. And you can see it in the video that you took, that you turned around when I was shooting the one in the ditch. And he was the last man standing for them. And then he went down.
Well,
then we consolidated there. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that the part here that's pretty important is that, one, I mean, it was an overwhelming amount of, it was a well-placed ambush. I'll just say, I won't say great, but it was a well-placed ambush.
Yeah, it was well-placed. Yeah.
And there was an amazing amount of fire suddenly, which this is something I want to express to Patriots, because when you have an explosion of fire like this at you, it's no different than being overwhelmed in this information war. We need to relate. We're truly wanting to relate this back to what we're dealing with now. So everybody comes into the fight today. You're anticipating that it's going to be an overwhelming win with President Trump, and boom, the ambush hits. And the ambush is literally, they're twisting the numbers. They're faking out the results. They're putting out all sorts of information to make you believe that you have lost. That's the ambush. So the ambush in this sense is, right? Would you agree?
I would agree. Yeah. I mean, it's a sensory overload.
Right.
For us, it was noise and dirt and explosions and, you know, Taliban screaming at us. They're, you know, telling us we're going to kill. At that distance, they're screaming, though one or two of them could speak broken English. They're telling us, you're dead, you're going to die. And it's no different than going on social media right now and the left telling you basically that if they lose, they're going to be rioting. Well, they're already rioting. They don't care if they win or lose. They just want to riot. But, I mean, that's what it is. It's an overload on your senses, and it's an attempt at the ambush in a fight. It's not necessarily about the killing right away. It's about getting you to break your morale and lose. And that's where they get you.
Right, and that's really important, because that's what the ambush can do to you, just like now. I mean, you can literally break your will and go, oh, we're done. And instead, and I think we all had, this is universal. I mean, you can hear all the stories you want about ambush, but when that first round hits and explodes, I was in between you and Dave's team, which was high. You were in the valley. I was sitting in that little ravine, a little creek
bed. Yeah.
And it was so confusing at the moment. We didn't even know if the shooters were in the trees or if they were exactly they were. But that first RPG cracked right by me. And it's a moment where you swallow hard, and then you've got to go to your training. And this is something, Patriots, I really want you to hear, because you've been training now for 3 years plus on digital warfare. That's what Chuck was leading to earlier. And so the ambush hits. This isn't time to go, oh, I don't know if POTUS is going to win. Look, the resolve is he's going to win. End of story. Now let's fight. And that's what you have to do in that moment. You have to, you grab yourself, you swallow you make that first big gulp. And it's like, okay, clear your head, focus on what your mission is. And now your mission is forward, sweep, fight, fight, fight. Would you agree?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, you know what? To take it to the POTUS part of it, I mean, that man has done all the fighting. I mean, he's tripped every ambush and fought through the other side, and he's still dancing. I mean, if that doesn't give you guys a little inspiration, there's nothing will. But it can't all be him. It wasn't just all me in that fight. There were, you know, I'd be dead if it wasn't for 3 20-year-olds and, you know, Dave Pickett and a couple other guys that were up with you. I mean, hell, if they'd have buggered off with the rest of the platoon, we couldn't take on 80 guys. I mean, we could have for a little bit. I mean, but the extra gunfire from Dave and Mike and John up there with you, that probably tipped the scale. I mean, seven guys against 80 is a little better than four, you know? And so you look at it from a POTUS perspective, that poor bugger has been fighting on his own for 4 years. I don't mean that he doesn't have a digital army. I mean, he does, and he's got people that love him, and they should. But he's been kind of fighting on his own. He's the guy walking into every ambush, and you don't think he doesn't see an ambush coming? That man sees an ambush from a mile away. Doesn't stutter a step. He doesn't have a slack moment. The guy goes straight in. Goes straight in and does what he has to do. And now he needs his people to get him over that finish line.
Oh, man.
You know, he's not 54. The man's 74. Like, give the guy a hand here, folks. Like,
Patriots, I just want you to realize who's saying. I want you to realize who's saying this. This is Chuck Prodnick. He's a veteran, retired soldier, infantry guy from PPCLI in Canada, and he's telling us, he's telling the Patriots out here, hey, this is what we see. He sees how strong POTUS is. He sees a warrior when he knows one, and we're hearing it from Canada. And I think this is something to take to heart and take proudly. I mean, we've got a president that the world sees, and you're saying it, Chuck. I mean, he's a warrior, but it's going to take Patriots.
He's an absolute warrior, yep.
And it's going to take Patriots standing up and going on the digital offensive, okay? This now is a point to pick it up. They're trying to run the steel. Now it's time to saturate the airwaves, saturate every blue account, saturate every comment thread, get out there, dig, and spread completely the truth. We know this is the steel, and this is the time to push more than ever. I mean, this is what you guys have all heard me say in this last week. This is our Normandy, and we absolutely is our Normandy. All right. The knowledge piece, I just noticed somebody here, and I respect the comment that we've got no knowledge. We do have knowledge. Okay. Follow what General Flynn is telling you. Pay attention to big accounts. If you need to dig like you know how to dig, the numbers are there, and it is absolutely true that the media, all you have to start doing is just quoting every point you can find where the media is telling you they're going to steal it. And all you have to do is go back 2 weeks forward, and it is all there. They are absolutely promising that they were going to rig this election. So start spreading that as truth and let people start to be faced with that, confronted with the absolute lies that the media is now putting out now. But this has to be an absolute offensive now. We have got to turn the tide like this ambush. And I'm going to go back to something else Chuck just said. Keep in mind what he just said. There was only about 10 of us, roughly. Is that right, Chuck? About 10 or so on the ground?
When we got cut off, there were seven of us, yeah.
Okay, so we had a full platoon going in. The ambush separated. Part of that platoon went back. And part of this story we haven't even got to yet, but I'm just going to drop it in. Our group was reported dead by command, and when they just basically had given up on us. This was a fight of a few guys taking on about 80 Taliban. So we're clear, and it's not an exaggeration. And where we got those numbers was a British helicopter, Apache, that was flying security over the top of us, that was radioing down, giving us what the actual numbers were, and what that was telling us. And they finally told us, you guys got to get out of there because we're seeing more Taliban rushing in on you, and we don't think you can stand the fight. And they were right. But that was about 80 of us that we were standing up against. We have millions of digital soldiers, millions across this country and across the globe. And this is now time just to say, okay, enough is enough. Turn the tide and just wail on the media. I mean, wail on them like you have never wailed before. That's like burning heat off your keyboard. That's the same thing, because in the same effort, if we let them even have an inch, they are going to steal this election, okay? And that is not going to happen. And this is where POTUS, our president, needs us. And it's the same moment that Chuck was saying, that in the ambush, they anticipate breaking your will. But what the Taliban didn't count on was the resistance and then the offensive that came from PPCLI, Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, which is Chuck was leading his squad. And I'm going to let you continue, Chuck. So you've thrown the grenades, we dropped the dude in the ditch, and you've reassembled now. And now we're getting an assessment, right?
Well, now we've consolidated, figured out who who pulled back and who got cut off with us. And I think initially, and you were there, we Dave Pickett and I, the other leader, we kind of thought, well, somebody's going to come peel us out of here. That's what you hope. That's kind of what you're geared for, is they're not going to just leave us. And like you said, they'd written us off as dead already. They didn't think anybody could have lived through that. And to be honest, at that point, I wasn't sure how we did, but we did. And so we bunkered in, and like you mentioned, that British Apache pilot kept relaying down through the radio that things were not good for us, and we could see it. You could hear them and see them, and they pushed us a couple times to probe us. We pushed them back, but we were running low on ammunition at this point, and about 45 minutes in, Dave and I realized that this was only going to be up to us to get out. And we put our heads together, took stock of our ammunition, and figured we had about 300 meters to fight backwards to our vehicles to get out of there. And so I pulled the boys in, and I said, we're going to make a breakout. And if anybody gets hit and goes down, then we will all stay. Is everybody good with that? And you were there. You remember everybody kind of nodded their head and said, okay. Yep. And we started the push to break out, and that's fell apart pretty much immediately, because that was about the time the Taliban decided to hit us for the third time. And Dave and Mike got separated from us right away. And it was complex terrain. It was all compounds. It was twisting, turning alleyways. You couldn't tell which direction we were fighting half the time. But we got a hold of Mike and Dave again, brought them back into the group, and kept fighting backwards for the next half hour or so. And, made it out to our vehicles somehow. I'm not sure how. And when we got there, I remember looking up at my vehicle, and a fella from another section was in it. And I said, get out of my car. What are you doing there? I said, we all thought you were dead. I said, well, we're not dead, so please move. And he did. And that night, we PB'd our patrol base back to that little British camp we stayed at that night, about 2 kilometers away from Sangin. And so everybody's hugging and high-fiving, and, you know, couldn't believe we got out of there. And I pulled Ben aside. And bear in mind, he's 24, and he's a kid at this point. And I pulled him aside and asked him, well, why on earth did you jump into that field with us? You could have stayed on the safer side and pulled back with the platoon. And he looked me square in the eye and said, well, I figured you guys were dead. And he goes, I didn't want to keep on going this. That was the case. He goes, I'd rather die out there with you. So you got nothing to say to this guy at this point. What am I supposed to say to somebody who's was more willing to die for the notion that we were dead? You know, that was the choice he made at 24 years old.
Yeah, he's a pretty amazing guy.
There's no way he's an absolutely amazing guy. He's a minister now in Ontario. He's, you know, I couldn't think of anybody better to tend to a flock than that guy. I mean,
that's the truth. So I've got to,
you can't lose a fight with a guy like that.
No, you can't. And that's the spirit that, I mean, Ben epitomizes the spirit of what it takes to defeat an ambush. It takes that 100% commitment that everybody is jumping in and you're not going to stop. I don't care what it takes. You're going to push through that fight. You're not going to run. You're going to see it to the end, and whatever it happens, it's literally, you're going to fight and win, or you're going to die fighting. There's no in between. Would you agree?
There absolutely is. And we talked about breaking the morale of, you know, the enemy, or having yours broken. I expected the Taliban to break and run as we got closer. I mean, we were better than they were. And not that they were bad soldiers. These guys were all in their mid-30s. These were veterans. These guys weren't, you know, new guys in the game. These guys were experienced fighters. They were well armed, well trained, but we were just better, tougher. And when we pushed into them, it was at muzzle contact. Well, you saw how close you were there. You saw how close it was. It was absolutely dirty. And there's everything in my head was screaming that they would break and run. They got to break and run. They didn't. They just went down, you know, and you're not going to, and to parallel that to where we are right now, you're not going to see the other side break and run. They're not going to get converted. Maybe in ones and twos, you might convert a person here and there, and that's fine. That's good. But you're not going to break their spirit. You're not. You're just going to have to defeat them.
Absolutely.
You're going to have to win. They're not going to run. There's not going to be some pivot point in this battle where they just give up suddenly and say, you know what? We're worn out. Because they're not going to wear out. This is what they do.
And it's what
they expect you to wear out.
Right. And to for them to wear out and to lose, they lose everything. It's 100%. That's the same way with these Taliban. So what I'm going to deviate just a little bit based on some feedback we're getting on the board here. And what we need to really, I think, to convert this to some real tangibles. And I've had a couple comments about wanting to hear tangibles. And I hit some earlier, but I want to do this again so people are really clear how this sort of works with a digital war. It's very easy to conceive, thanks to years of mental programming, with Hollywood films and everything else, where the war is seen as one thing. And the only thing war is seen as is that point of guns and what we're talking about. So that's very easy for people to visualize. And what I've just really realized over the last couple of years is people just have a hard time understanding what offensive information war looks like. Defensive, everybody's doing. It's reactive. So as you said earlier.
It's all reactive.
Right. Yeah. So as we see.
Let me break that down to the polling place. You talked about that earlier when you were in Philadelphia running that campaign for the
Go.
For the guy.
Go.
Let's break it down to tonight's stuff in Philadelphia. You find out weeks beforehand, one way or another, through the cyber ways of doing things, who's going to be at these polling stations? Who's running them? What machines are they using? What's the software they're using? Analyze the building, the locations, the format of everything. Everything needs to be analyzed, and that's where people should be starting, is just data mining and analyzing everything from the people to the machinery to the location and putting together intelligence summaries. And whatever you do with that at that point, that's up to you. You know, forward that to whoever, you know, some mastermind somewhere. I don't know. I'm a ground pounder. I'm the guy that throws grenades and does what I do. But that's where you have to start. And you're not taking on 80 Taliban. I can tell you that's no fun either. You don't have to take on 80 left-wing nuts or the 80 establishment, you know, entities. You'd need to take on one of something. Take on one, defeat it, and then move on to the next thing. If you're never going to win if you think you have to take on 80 of something at a time. Start with one. Start with a small fight and win that small fight. The next fight's easier. Just do it.
Right, I agree.
I'll tell you right now.
So
others can't do it himself.
Well, so here we are now, and we're in the ambush. I think this is the critical thing: is there's a lot to learn, and as we go through this era, and we eventually win, we're going to be able to do a lot of reflection back and to build the lessons learned to go forward. But here's the real critical thing right now for Patriots: we're in the ambush. Would you agree, Chuck?
I would consider tonight an ambush, although you guys have been in kind of the reorg position where you're like, is somebody coming to save us? Are we supposed to save ourselves or what do I do now? And don't get me wrong, people have enjoyed that because, you know, they feel like they're fighting and on some level they're fighting. At least they're awake to the point where they know that they have to be fighting. But look, give me a tangible that's come of it other than having people aware. And that's a great thing. Don't get me wrong. You can't take that away. There's no metric to measure that, how important that is. But give me a tangible other, you know, and I'm not looking at like the Project Veritas type people where, yeah, you know what? He gets some people to say some stuff. What's come of it? I mean, at least he's doing something. You should all be Project Veritas. Everybody out there should be doing a little bit of Project Veritas because you know what? He tries. He kind of does some stuff that's sort of impressive. He gets some people to say some stuff. You know what? He goes after the low hanging fruit and gets some idiots to say some stuff. Good. I tell you what, you get 10,000 idiots to say some stupid stuff. Then you have a difference.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, here are the things, Patriots, and I want you to really hear this. And none of this tonight is critical. This is educational. I really want to be clear about this, right? Chuck and I are talking from a very, very real perspective. And we're not talking about, we're talking from a point where he and I both almost lost our lives. It's the simplest way to put it. We were in an ambush that was intense. It was a difference between making the commitment to live and fight and win or die fighting, or it was to lose everything. So what we're trying to frame here, and really, would you agree, Chuck? Is that right?
Well, and that's how I view this fight right now. This fight is as important. Well, this fight you're in tonight and have been leading up to is just as important. The fight is just as real. I mean, nobody's shooting you with an RPG yet. I hope it doesn't come to that. But you have to decide how hard you want to fight. Do you just want to post some stuff every now and then and, you know, be that guy? Or do you want to dig? Do you want to get after something? Do you want to make a difference some way? And I mean, really make a difference. Then I don't know what that looks like for everybody. I mean, I've done my fighting. I've got my own fighting to do up here. You know, I wish I could do something down there. We've talked about that too. There's only so much any one person can do, and it can be very overwhelming. And right. I'm sure people are sitting there thinking to themselves, what can I do? I'm one person.
Right. And that's just, that's
it's one fight.
Right. And this is what's really important about the story of the ambush. If every single person in the squad felt that it was one against 80, we would have all died. But every Patriot out here has linkages that you've created digitally. You can create teams. You can build your squads. That is not a problem. You have that knowledge now. You have the ability to trust. And it doesn't have to be. People keep trying to look for a centralized command node, meaning everybody wants to say, well, okay, let's all get together and have a common information sharing. No, that's not what makes this fight work. That's what makes the left work. Okay, so let me be clear about how the left organizes. The left organizes on a communist model. It uses a CCP model of hub and spoke, which means this. There is a central planning committee of some fashion. I want you to imagine that's the hub of a wheel. So when you look at it, like the bicycle wheel, that's the hub. That's where all of their knowledge sits. And all of the spokes that come off of that hub is where they send out all of the decisions that are being made. That's how the left operates. A central command planning committee and all of the nodes that go out there receive the same type of information and directions, or it's broken down so that each of those little pieces of that get specific instructions. So Antifa gets it from the central node. BLM gets it from the central node. Whoever else you want, you're going to name, Code Pink, whatever, they all get their instructions from a central node. There's too many Patriots. Go ahead.
Well, and these nodes you're speaking of, they're very visual too. The people who are trying to steal the election at these polling stations, they're getting direction from someone. They're taking direction. It's either in a digital format, it's in a paper format, it's in a format that can be acquired one way or another. You guys figure that part out. You look at the riots that were happening, there were pre-positioned rental trucks with shields, batons, weapons, stacks of bricks. All it takes is for one good digital warrior to find out who rented the truck, who's got screen captures of the vehicles dropping off bricks in pre-positioned spots. It takes very little, you know, sleuthing, detective work to find this out and just expose. If all you do is expose, all you do is compile that information and send it to local law enforcement and blast it to the media, well, that's what it takes to start ripping that back. That's what starts to unspoke the spoke. You have to do something. But to sit there and say, well, it's George Soros doing that, well, we all know that. We're like I said, we're 2 years past that now. Everybody acknowledges that. Get deeper. Do more. Right. This fight, it's not gonna go away the way we think it is.
Right. And this is what's important, is that people you're identifying, whether it's Hussein Obama, whether it's Soros, whether it's, I don't know, I can go on a list of people, Hillary Clinton.
There's a list.
We all know that list. All right. What we need to know, this needs to get down to the local. This is where the Patriots, and I'm going to say this, this is the weakness. It's one thing to be organized and doing swarm attacks on blue check accounts on Twitter. But until you bring that fight down to county by county, and that's why I did that series, to organize county by county to be able to push back and start rooting out who's who in the zoo, basically. Identifying who's on your school board, what's their background, who's funding them. Identifying who's on your city council, who's funding them, what's their political position, what's the mayor's political position, what financial ties does he have? You need to understand at this point that global interests are not interested as much as you think in the strategic fight at DC. They've got that handled with big firms that are legal firms that are dealing with influence and their all their sort of political nonsense. Where the internationals have figured out is if they can go local and they can buy off a mayor, Ted Wheeler in Portland is example. Right. If they can get to your local mayor and they start controlling that and the DOJ or the district attorney, not DOJ, but the district attorney, the DA, they can now start shaping that local environment and giving protection to their people. Now, we are at a point where we are seeing it, and that's fine. And it's great to say that, you know, with the Patriot movement and what Trump's doing, they've seen it. Now it's time to turn this on the offensive. We're actually past the offensive point, but there is no time but now. And so it is time to get aggressive. You've got to dig into your local places. You've got to find out the information, like Chuck is saying. This is when information warfare becomes offensive, because now as you collectively move that through your local community, the local community begins to wake up. It's great. And I've said this so many times on my podcast. It's great to listen to what President Trump is doing. It's very important. But when you spend your whole time worrying about when the arrests are going to come or what DOJ is going to do, here's my answer. I personally don't care, because whatever they do, they're doing. I can't affect that, but I can affect my county. I can't affect my city. I can affect my local community I live in. And when you take that responsibility to take all these amazing tools that we have here and fight, 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 that is truly, truly where we are going to win. It's literally, and I'm encouraging all of you to please go back and listen to my series. It was a 9-part series called County by County. And it's so important. And I'm going to be doing more on this. I mean, my whole focus for the next, I don't know, probably 3 to 4 months is going to be centering around this local fight, because this is the only way we're going to win in the long term. POTUS is going to win this election one way or another. Don't know what it's going to look like. He's going to win. Okay, great. We got the presidency. I hope we keep the Senate, and I hope we keep Congress. And that fight in D.C., whatever DOJ is doing, Durham's doing, you have zero control over it. Zero. But you have absolute control in your county, in your city, in your school boards. And that's for you to dig, find out, have information, go to the county meetings, go to the city meetings, stand up and fight. You know, find a paper locally, even if it's small, that's conservative. And if there isn't one, start an online blog. Start posting that information. We're in an information awareness point where you're going to get traffic as long as you're pushing it. And when I say that, like, don't do Facebook. I mean, come on. We're well past that, because I hear people go, oh, I did Facebook and they blocked me. Yeah, no kidding. I did Twitter, but they blocked me. Yeah, okay, got it. Start reaching beyond this. I mean, find your places where, like, okay, Podbean. Look at how many people are here tonight in Podbean. We had 8,900 people listening to the show in the first 3 hours. Tonight, we have 2,700 people listening to a show on Podbean. And I'm bringing this up because Podbean is not the normal native platform like YouTube, Twitter, the normal places people go. And yet, people are adapting. They're realizing that if you go to YouTube, you're going to get smoked. So here we are. And we're doing an incredible job tonight of pushing information. And that's what we have to do. Okay, we've got to adapt. And you have to use the resources that will survive. And when one thing gets hit, you're always saving your stuff offline so you can rebuild quickly, repopulate, and hit it again. But it's the local focus on information dissemination that's going to win this fight. I don't know what the next 6 months or a year is going to look like. Like I said earlier, this is like Normandy. And in Normandy, they hit the beach, they climbed the rock faces, lost thousands of men that day, broke the German defenses. It was brutal, but they didn't win the war. Man, if they had stopped then, Germany would have won. Instead, they pushed for the next year, daily grind, hard, pushing forward. And you get to that place out there, finally, a year later, that they're at the, the Citadel in Berlin, Chuck, where the Nazis had their stronghold, whatever the heck that was.
The Reichstag, yeah.
The Reichstag, right. So the Nazis were still fighting until they blew the thing up. I mean, this is who we're dealing with. So it is an incredible.
And I know a lot of your listeners are probably thinking, who is this Canadian that, you know, with all of his silly opinions? I mean, I've been banging away on my keyboard, you know, doing good things. Listen, guys, girls, I take hope from everything that you guys are doing. And the people like me up here are taking hope from everything you guys have done already and all the great things you're going to do. Don't slack off. Get dirtier. Go deeper. This fight isn't over by any... Whatever happens tonight, this fight is not over. I mean, the deep state, as we know it, and those of you that know it well, understand that it's been around generationally. Who knows how long, where it came from, how long, how deep the threads go. Start pulling the threads apart. Just pick one little thread and start pulling it. Just start digging on it. Do whatever little part you can do. And if that one doesn't take you anywhere, pick another one. Get into something that you can win. Find something. Because I'll tell you right now, and I've said this 100 times up here in the last couple of weeks, how goes America, so goes the world. We need you guys to win. We need you to win. You have to win. If you lose, we all lose. This is an important fight. That's how we see it up here. Those are the people that think like me, and there's a lot of us. There's a huge percentage. We have the silent majority up here, too. We need you to win. We need you to fight the way you can fight. Do what you can do, because everyone's depending on you to win this.
That's the truth. You said it earlier, and it's so true. I mean, it's easy to feel insulated from the actual fight as the digital fight goes on. And the place that is very real for anybody that's been in war is to realize that this is just another form of warfare, and it's just as deadly and just as lethal.
And just as important.
So the outcomes of this right now are no different than when you're ambushed, hit with an IED, whatever that is, receiving rocket fire. I mean, those are easier to visualize because you're seeing explosions near you or you're seeing a body drop. Okay, that's real. But in a digital war, the consequences of not winning the digital war is an institution that changes so fast and so deadly that what we will see is a transformation in the society that, quite frankly, most people are not going to be able to keep pace with. And it's going to take the resolve of the digital army from this moment forward to fight like never before. So if you're going to spend some time nailing blue check accounts and spreading truth around, that's good, but you better also spend equal time on your local community. That's where the real rot is.
Yeah.
And we have got to create these sanctuaries where we can live and be. It's like, you know, when an insurgency only operates successfully unless it has sanctuary. If it can't have sanctuary, it dies out quickly. So when you look at Portland, and it is by name a sanctuary city, but it is also a sanctuary legally and economically for Antifa. Regardless of what you'll hear in the news, it is estimated, and what you'll even hear from Portlanders, who are half of them are still asleep, is that there's about 30,000 Antifa in Portland. That's real numbers. Okay, this is no joke. It's a small army up there that they've been quietly incubating with help of intelligence agencies, probably from all over the world. Okay. So don't kid yourself. This is not, that part of the fight is very real. It's very aggressive and it's very ruthless. So when you start to realize that Portland is Portland's function here is to create sanctuary for the ground army. But at the same time, when you're operating, you have to think in terms of that. You have to think in terms of, okay, I'm going to change my community. Where's my first sanctuary? It's my home. Where's my next sanctuary? My neighborhood. If your neighborhood is all blue, then start making linkages around your community that are red. And even if you're spread out, you start to create these linkages so you can communicate and you can start influencing quietly, researching, sharing all these tools that you've learned on the big media, fighting the big check accounts, now it has to apply locally. And when you get into the local fight and start to root out this rot, you can turn the table so hard and so fast. And it might take, and remember, we're stuck with this election process unless you can prove otherwise and prove somebody to get them out of office. But that's another part of it. Chuck's hitting on that. If you're digging in deep to somebody, you find their background, they're tied in with corruption, and you can run a petition to get them booted out of office if people realize it. That's the process of waking people up. I mean, we've got to really keep people focused. And I think not just here, Chuck, but I would agree even up, I mean, in every country, don't you agree? I mean, we've got to keep people focused locally.
Oh, yeah. Before I say goodnight, I'll add to that. Yeah, we are a few years behind you guys. It seems like our tempo in elections is one bound behind you guys. Like, you had your Obama, and then thankfully you got a Trump. But we have a Trudeau. We don't have a Trump. We have what we have, and it's better than Trudeau. If he gets in, that's great. But we need you guys to win so that it gives us the hope and the momentum and the initiative up here, the people who don't have the fighting spirit yet, to actually get on board and get fighting. And that's why what you're doing, in whatever small way you're doing it, in whatever big way you're doing it, is important. Just know that what you're doing around the world, not just here in Canada, not just in your states, it's important. People are watching what you're doing, and they're taking heart in what you're doing. And that movement that you're a part of, and what you can call it, MAGA, you can call it whatever you want, it's important around the world. People everywhere are awake to what you're doing, and it has to keep going, and it has to be a fight that's won. So just know I'm very proud of all you guys, and I hope this fight tonight goes our way. And, you know, whichever way it goes, don't stop fighting. Now, I got to get going, Scotty, and it was great catching up again. Good talking.
Absolutely. Chuck, I want to thank you very much.
Love what you're doing, Robert.
And I know Patriots are throwing hands up and prayers for you, and just thank you for all you've done. You're a great friend. Chuck and I have known each other for a long time now, and shared through a lot of really crazy moments over our life. So, Chuck, you be safe. Thank you very much. Keep in touch. We'll touch base later next week and kind of see where the craziness settles out. Sound good?
All right. God bless everybody. Have a good night.
God bless, Chuck. Have a good night.
So thanks for tuning in. Remember, if you like the channel, please hit subscribe, like the episode, and share it on your favorite social media forum. The Bards FM podcast can be found on Podbean at www.bards.fm. You can also find the Bards FM podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, YouTube, and BitChute by entering Bards FM in the search bar on the respective apps or websites. Also remember to check out Bards of War Fighting is Everything documentary at bardsofwarfilm.com. That's bardsofwarfilm.com. Buying a copy helps support these podcasts and future film projects. And if you would like to support the channel with a donation link is below. All podcasts are written and produced by Scott Kesterson. Opinions expressed are the individual's only. Interpretations of events are the sole rights and opinions of the podcast presenter and guests. Bards FM, Bards of War, Fighting is Everything, and Expedition Cafe are trademarks of Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. All work is owned and copyrighted by Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. Thank you again. You have been listening to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, out for now.